This break is brought to you by The Marine Biology Trip, an evidence for faith adventure in science and the Bible in the Florida Keys for ages 14 and up. Here's what a past student had to say.
Well, I've definitely grown in my knowledge on marine biology. I came here and I knew nothing, and I finished through this, and I feel like I learned a lot. And I also feel like I grew a lot in my faith and spiritually, because it has taught me how the Bible works. It's something that you'll never get somewhere else. Here is a place that I have felt very at home. The group is very inclusive, and all the people you meet here are going to be lifelong friends.
Find out more about this adventure by clicking the link in the description or go to evidenceforfaith.org/marinebiology. That's evidence4faith.org/marinebiology.
So as you can see, what we're going to do is we're going to cover on page one, I list the different nights, Friday night, tonight. Does God exist? We're going to look at apologetics. Apologetics, we're going to defend the faith. And one thing that I often get invited to do is go to places, universities, schools, and things like this. Even churches at times will have me come and they'll ask me, can you give us, talk about the, does God exist? So that's one question everybody should be able to answer. Does God exist? A second question, is Christianity the true faith? We're going to talk about that tomorrow night. Easter Sunday, we're going to talk about, is Jesus God? Did Jesus ever say that he was actually God? Many people, I'll tell you more about this when we get to it, have asked me that question specifically. Monday, we're going to talk about another question that people who don't believe in the Bible often come up, and they say the Bible is full of errors, it's not accurate, thus it cannot be trusted. We're going to answer that question for you. On Tuesday, God willing, we're going to talk about, is there evidence supporting the Bible? Here, I'm going to get into archaeological evidence that the Bible is real, which is unlike any other religion. The religions don't have this. Christianity does. And we're going to get into that. And then the last night that we have our Bible session, organized Bible session like this, we're going to talk about a little bit of what I talked about last night, just briefly on a few points. Does science disprove the Bible? Because that is something that I frequently get asked to speak on. So that's what we're doing. So tonight we're going to be talking about, does God exist? That's going to be our premise tonight as we get into this. So with that, let's open in prayer and let's get into this lesson here, showing you about, or answering the question, does God exist? So Father God, we come before you and we ask that you would just bless our time. Your Holy Spirit, Lord, would just move upon our hearts and upon our minds to be able to take in information that you have given. And you show us so distinctly that you are there. So help me throughout this session here in particular, but through this whole course, to let people see that you do exist. Your handiwork is all around us, and the evidence that you are here is remarkable. So help me to show this to them tonight, and may their minds be able to take this in. Because I don't know what the condition is of these people. You do, but I don't know if they really do believe that you exist or not. So let's try and go through this, and Lord, speak to their hearts. Speak to your children, we ask in Jesus' name. Amen. So, first of all, I'm going to say this, and I got to speak a few years back at a major university, and I got asked to speak at the Atheist Club. Now, if you don't know what an atheist is, an atheist is somebody who says there is no God, definitively. There's no question about it in their mind. There is no God. An agnostic is different. An agnostic is someone who says, I don't know if there is a God or not. So there's a difference between the two. They're not synonyms. This was the Atheist Club, and they asked me to come and speak. And I was like, really? This, okay, why do you want me to come and speak? You're going to come, want me to make fun of me or whatever? But they said, no, we really want you to come and speak. And so I did and went to this university. And, I mean, there were probably about 200 people in the auditorium where I was speaking there. And I got up, and the first thing, I said, thank you for letting me come. I'm very, very honored that you, your Atheist Club, would invite me to come and speak to you all. I appreciate that. And I said, you had a big banner up here saying what I was speaking on, the existence of God. And I said, I want to just start off with this. Science, and what is science? Science is actually the knowledge gained by empiricalism, and testing, observation, scientific experiments where you test things, you observe things and stuff like this. We do experiments and things. The thing is, science cannot prove the existence of God. That was the first thing I said to them. Science cannot prove the existence of God. And the place just, yay! They're cheering and everything like that. And then after I calmed down, I said, now, science cannot disprove the existence of God. Then you could hear the crickets in the background going because no one said anything. Basically, I'm saying we can't do an experiment like pour a chemical into a test tube and God come crawling out. You just can't do that and have that repeated. Science, from what we have in empirical science, you can't do an experiment to prove that God exists. But you can't prove God. You can't do an experiment that proves that God doesn't exist. So the thing is, there's the first thing we have to understand. Science does not have the answers to everything. Matter of fact, as I was pointing out to you in last night's lecture, sometimes science has taught things totally incorrect. I mean, science has the worst record for getting things right. I mean, really, if you want to get down to it, just the evidence of the last couple of years with COVID should be enough to right there tell you science doesn't have all the answers. And they constantly are having to change their answers. I remember some years ago, a parent called me up Fort Wilderness when I was still working there. And she says, my son threw his Bible away. It's in the trash can. And I said, what can I do? She says, what do I respond? What do I say to him? How do I handle this? And I said, well, did you ask him why? He says, yes. He says that he doesn't believe in the Bible anymore. He believes in science. Science is his God. Science has all the answers. Science is truth. And I told her, what you got to help them realize is science is probably the most morphing, now that you know what the word morph means, changing, shape and stuff like that, to change things. It's the most morphing God there is. Science is constantly having to change because it keeps making mistakes to try and find the truth. And they constantly are making mistakes. Do you know that for almost 1,800 years, science taught that there were only 1,026 stars in the universe? And that was taught in all major universities. It was in books and stuff like this. Now, today we laugh at that. We say it's ridiculous. There's so many things that science, and that's going to be one of the last lessons we do here. Science constantly makes mistakes. So don't think that science is your God. If science is your God, your God is constantly changing. He is always making mistakes. He is always trying to correct his mistakes. And many times he will try to correct and he makes a bigger mistake. What kind of God do you want to follow like that, that has that type of a record? That's not the God I want to follow, who has those type of a records. So we do find evidence for God, though. There is evidence supporting the existence of God, and there's quite a bit of that. The organization of the natural world, as we're down here studying marine biology, the organization of what you are seeing, when you were out on excursions today and saw things, you see an intelligent designer behind things. There was a classic book written a long time ago, it was over 100 years ago, by a guy by the name of William Paley, and it's called Natural Theology, and it's a classic today. It's not the easiest reading book to many high schoolers, but it is a fascinating book where William Paley is basically talking about evidence that there is a God by showing nature. He's describing things in nature. You understand why a biologist would love this. And the thing is, he talks about, and there's a classic example in here that he mentions about a man walking through a forest, and as he's walking through the forest, he stumbles upon something on the ground. He starts to kick it with his shoe, and he finds out it's a little device, not a stone. There's something here. He reaches down, picks it up, and as he holds this in his hand and he examines it, he notices that it's making a slight sound. It has little arms on it that are moving around. When he opens it up, he sees all sorts of gears and little intricate designed pieces that are all working. Of course, we're describing a watch. And the thing is this man looks at this, he's out in the forest, there's no way anybody would pick this thing up and think, wow, look what some squirrels did, or some chipmunks, by finding little pieces and putting this all together randomly without knowing what they're doing, and they made a perfect thing called a watch. And so Paley is describing in his book, no one would think like that. What you're going to think is someone designed, some engineer, someone with great intelligence designed this thing and had every single working part. Because if you remove one part, probably many of you have had a watch break at some time. If you remove one piece of the working watch, the whole watch stops working. It doesn't work. But with all the pieces together, hundreds of little pieces all working together here, it can work perfectly and tell time. This did not happen by random chance. This is a design. If there's a design like this, there was a designer that put it together. Paley is using that type of an example to explain that there is a designer who made all of this stuff, and that's what this book is all about. It's a fascinating book. It's not very expensive. You can buy it on Amazon, but that's what it is. And so he uses this watchmaker analogy and shows that the natural world, like what we're down here doing, this is, Paley would love to be on this course because we could have him teaching some of this. The natural world bears evidence of a design and of a purpose. Not only does this thing just sit on the ground, it has a purpose. We can tell time with it. We set our day by this, our schedules. We set our life by this thing that was found there. There's a purpose to it. There's a method to it. Obviously, there was a watchmaker. That's simple. And so in this book, Paley puts this out, and I think he makes a fabulous point through this whole thing. So that's one way we can see that there's evidence of God. As you look at these creatures that we pull out of the oceans, both plant, algae, animals, I look at stuff like this, and I thank God that he gave me the eyes of a biologist because I see the maker's design in this stuff. To me, it's obvious. So that's one piece of evidence I can give you. I mean, there's a lot of things I could do. We're limited on time here. I want to go to another one. The second point is what's called the anthropic principle. Now, I don't know if you guys have, know what the anthropic principle is. It's a scientific term. It's talking about Earth and how the Earth is so perfectly designed, perfectly set for humans to live in. I mean, this place, this planet, is perfect for us. No doubt you've listened to other astrophysicists and astronomers and stuff talk about different planets that they discover stuff. And the thing is, there's not people living there. They've never found living things on other planets. And I don't know if there are, but there's nothing out there that shows me that there could be. We've never seen anything like that. The Earth, on the other hand, is perfectly designed. Mars isn't. Venus isn't, Jupiter isn't, Saturn isn't. Earth is perfectly designed. And just to give you some examples, a few examples here, maybe about, I don't know, 10 or something like that I'm going to give you, of these examples of what we see here, that how everything on this planet is so perfectly set, just like a watch, for a purpose to do things, showing it has to be done with an intelligence behind it. For instance, the O2 levels on the planet. We have just the right amount of oxygen. It's about 21% of the atmosphere. It's perfect. Have you ever thought what would happen if we lived in a 100% oxygen atmosphere? In the wintertime, if you're walking across the carpet in your house and you go up to your little sister and you touch her, there could be a spark. In a pure oxygen environment, that would cause the entire planet to engulf in flames. That's what killed the Apollo astronauts. Back just as the program was starting, three of the astronauts were in the capsule. They had made a mistake, and they put full pure oxygen inside the sealed capsule. There happened to be a spark inside there. They were incinerated in their seated positions in there inside the capsule. That made change. They had to do redesigning and stuff. Most intelligent people putting this thing together made a really dumb mistake. They didn't account for static electricity and sparks by having a pure oxygen environment. The oxygen level on this planet is absolutely perfect for our life. Not only that, the carbon dioxide levels are perfect. It's the perfect amount in our atmosphere for photosynthesis for all these plants and all the algae and stuff. It's absolutely perfect. These plants can take the carbon dioxide and convert it into sugars and stuff and make their food, which then we consume also. And they do this. They make carbohydrates. They can make different types of oils and lipids and things. They make other compounds that we eat. And it's all perfectly balanced. Nitrogen. our atmosphere is primarily nitrogen. That's great. As I told you, if it was pure oxygen, that would kill us. It was pure carbon dioxide. Or even if you change those percentages a little bit, we're going to have major impact. Things are going to start dying. The nitrogen level is perfect. It's perfect. And it also allows, like when lightning and stuff comes, nitrogen from the atmosphere is actually put into the soil. Lightning does that. And there's other things, because nitrogen is necessary for cellular growth. So it's got the perfect setup for nitrogen. The radiation from the sun. Some of you today found out that the sun, you did little unauthorized experiments, but that's fine. You found that the sun produces really good radiation. And some of you are showing signs of that today. Either that or you put way too much blush on your face. I'm not sure which one it is. But, no, I know, you got burnt. A lot of people got burnt today because the sun's radiation. Well, it could be a lot worse, let me tell you. We could have a lot more radiation problems if we didn't have this atmosphere that we've just described and how the atmosphere is set up on this planet. It is perfect to allow life to exist on this planet. The air itself. You ever notice the air is odorless? It is. I mean, you often don't think that. Wow, I got up this morning. Wow, I just noticed the air doesn't have any odor in it. Do you know why? What that does for us? Because it has no odor, chemicals and stuff, we can smell them. You can put perfume on. You can put aftershave on. You can do a diffusion experiment and really gross everybody out around you when you flatulate. I mean, air allows the gases to be moved around. It's the perfect medium. If we lived in the water with fish, it wouldn't work like that because the water is different than air. Air helps to disperse it much easier. Air is also, if you ever notice, it's colorless. You ever thought about that? Air doesn't have any color. And that's absolutely perfect because it allows us to see a clear vision. It's the perfect medium, air is also, for sounds, vibrations to travel through. You all can hear me. You can hear the traffic. You hear planes flying over. You can even hear the leaves rustling of these coconut trees right here, the wind blowing through them. You can hear all this because of air. And the way that the air is set up, it is allowing all of this. Are you starting to see a design of all of this? That's called the anthropic principle. And so it's perfect for sound vibrations to go through. It's the perfect medium also to watch a sunset or a sunrise. For instance, the astronauts, when they went to the moon, the Apollo astronauts, they were fascinated that when they got to the moon, they didn't have the sky like what we have. The astronauts couldn't see the stars on the moon. They could see the Earth, but they couldn't see like the stars like we have and stuff like this. It was different because the atmosphere allows us to be able, like right now, the stars are out. You can't see them, but we have a beautiful blue sky. You don't get that on the moon. This planet is so perfect that we get these beautiful sunsets and things. It's the perfect insulation also. This atmosphere that we have here protects us from being burned up. On the moon, in the daytime, the temperature of the moon goes up to 250 degrees Fahrenheit. When you're on the moon in the daytime. At nighttime, the temperature drops down to minus 380 degrees Fahrenheit. Why? There is no atmosphere. The atmosphere acts as a blanket and helps to hold in heat while shielding us from the sun's rays also. It's perfectly set up. Air pressure, as I was talking about last night with having air pressure, or was it this morning? I don't remember. Talking about how air pressure, air comes into our bodies when the diaphragm and the chest cavity expands, that allows air pressure to be pushed into our lungs and we can breathe. So it's perfect for breathing. Soil that we see on the ground, farmer fields and stuff like this. The chemicals in there are perfect for building living things to keep us alive.
This break is brought to you by The Marine Biology Trip, an evidence for faith adventure in science and the Bible in the Florida Keys for ages 14 and up. Here's what a past student had to say.
And it's an educational hands-on experience that you will never forget. It's going to stick with you. and you learn things that you probably wouldn't have learned in normal school. It's not what I expected to come here, but it exceeded my expectations of what it would be like. Because I thought it would just be like, okay, we do some homework, we snorkel, bam, done. You know, we see some fish. But like, we got to see some really cool stuff, and I've formed a lot of cool friendships that I probably never would have without the trip.
Find out more about this adventure by clicking the link in the description or go to evidenceforfaith.org/marinebiology. That's evidence, the number 4, faith.org/marinebiology.
The Bible, it says in the book of Genesis, God made us out of the basically the clay of the earth. Some years ago, about 30 years ago, I did a study trying to find out what is the chemical composition, the elemental composition of a human person. And I got, it's very easy to find. I could Google this and pull this out. Like people who have been cremated and stuff, what's the ash left over? What's the elements that are there? Then I tried to find composition of clay. What is the chemical composition of clays? And I took samples from different places around the world and had the comparisons. You can research all this. And what I found out, it's remarkably the exact same thing. We are literally made of the same stuff as clay is, just like the Bible says. Isn't that fascinating? This place, our soil even, in fact, shouts the existence of God. A second thing, God created us in his own image, not in the image of other types of animals, but God created us because he is a creator, and he created us to create things. One of your purposes, a purpose you have, is to build, to create. The fish out on the reefs, they do not have museums. They don't have automotives or other types of mechanical things. Other animals and stuff and plants and things on the planet don't have this kind of stuff. People were created to be creative. That's one of our purposes. Find what you are good at building, at creating, at making. Violins. Violins, you tell me, your violin, one of your violins, Avery, costs how many thousands? A lot. It was a massive amount of money. Well, I don't know. It's probably not a Stradivarius, eh? No? But those are super expensive, too. Now, you can get a really cheap one from Walmart. You can download and buy a violin off of Walmart. Or you can get one at Sears Roebuck if they still have them around. You can go to something like that and get one that's not that expensive. But if you try and buy a Stradivarius, Stradivarius are very, very expensive. And how do you know if it's a Stradivarius? It has his name on a label inside those, and it'll say something like 1721 or something, and you'll have his label there. The thing is, he is the creator of that violin, and he was proud of what he did, and his violins are a work of art. You were created to build things also. Have you been to an art institute? You look at what people build. Why do we build? Do fish build? Does your dog or cat build? Nothing like what you see at an art institute. People do this. Why? Because we were created by a creator in his image. Part of his image is a creator. We are created beings to create. That's what we are for. A painting. Paintings are one of the most beautiful ways for me that I have used to describe the existence of God. I've had discussions with people who don't believe in God, and one was Chris Mueller. You know who he is. We were one time sitting down here on a marine biology trip, and he says, I don't believe in God, and I don't know why you believe in God. Well, I got him talking about art. He thought I was just changing the subject. And I said, let's talk about art. You ever been to the Art Institute? And he said, yeah. I said, who's your favorite painter? He says, Rembrandt. I said, oh, The Night Watch? He says, oh, it's my favorite. And I go, oh, isn't that beautiful? The way Rembrandt did the angles and the lighting with the dark shades, oh, my gosh, masterful. He says, he your favorite? I said, I'm a Renoir. I love the French Impressionists. And, oh, and we started talking about this, and then I stopped him, and I said, Chris, did you ever meet Rembrandt? He says, this guy's been dead for hundreds of years, Michael. You need to get more sleep. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. That was really a stupid question. And then a few moments later, we got talking about something. Then I went back, and I said, did you ever meet anybody who talked with Rembrandt? What's the matter with you? No, the guy's been dead for hundreds of years. And I did you, you know, ever see, you know, meet him or know somebody who met him or talked with him? Or, and he's like, no, because Chris had told me he couldn't believe in God unless he saw him. So I said, you said that your favorite painter is Rembrandt. You believe that Rembrandt really lived. How do you know Rembrandt lived? He says, you can see his artwork in the museum. We talked about that. He even signed his name at the bottom. We're sitting down here among these coconut trees, a different hotel, but we're sitting down here. And I said, Chris, there is the artwork of God. How can you tell me you can't believe in him? You believe in Rembrandt, somebody you never met, never talked to anybody who ever met, never heard his voice or anything, and you tell me you can't believe in God? I said, you know the internal structure of leaves and of roots and of stems and stuff, because he's a biologist also. I said, you know this stuff. Haven't you seen the artwork? When we do a cross-section of a stem or a cross-section of a root, don't you see a design? When you guys are going to be doing labs this week looking at radiolarians or foraminiferins and other things, when you look at, you're going to see a design. It's a painting in a way that has God's signature all over it. That's the way my eyes as a biologist see things. So paintings are another one. Computers. I got a computer sitting here. You're going to really try and explain to me how this thing just formed by random things out in the forest or in a building or something. By the way, the building would be man-made. But all this was just happening by itself? No, because there's a language here. Languages are formed by intelligence. Can you think of any language that does not, that was not formed by an intelligence? You can't. To make a language, it takes intelligence to do it. How many of you, I'm just curious, how many of you were in elementary school, had a best friend that you made a secret code? You did that? You could pass notes. Oh, a lot of people say, yeah, a lot of people did this. Secret code, you could pass notes. Other people get the note. They don't know what it means. They just pass it on. And your friend gets it, and they know how to decipher the code and stuff. Do you guys realize you're doing the exact same thing as God? That code just didn't happen by random chance. It was designed by your intelligence. And not only was it designed, there was somebody who was able to read it. You just didn't make a language. You had someone with a way to be able to read it. Language shows intelligence. And if we have languages all over that are made from intelligence, well, let's talk about one of the greatest languages that we can have. Come on, computer. I froze up. I'll let Charlotte play with that, and I'll go to DNA. I'm guessing that's where I'm at next. DNA. Bill Gates himself says that DNA is a digital language, far more complex than any computer language we have ever made. Even Bill Gates, now he doesn't believe in God, but he believes in a language. And this is. This controls your how your cells make chemicals. It controls your heredity. It controls how you digest food. Making cells, you're depleting cells of your cell. Every day you lose cells, so many thousands of cells. Of skin, so many stomach cells every single day. They have to be replenished. They got to be copied and stuff. It's the DNA. Here's the instructions on how to do it. Different genes on here. You know how the nitrogen base pairs are set up inside this thing? Well, you know that there's an enzyme that comes along that is made, by the way, from the DNA. The DNA has the code for how to make the enzyme that opens this thing up. Then another enzyme comes along and will run down the thing and open up precisely where the code is to make the chemical that is needed. And then another enzyme comes in and starts picking out different other nucleic acids and puts them together. Boy, this is like being back in school, isn't it, Becca? And putting these things in here. And then another enzyme will pull that out and they'll cap the ends. Another enzyme will come along and actually make cut out the commercials and stuff in there, pieces that are not needed for that chemical to be made. And then, by the way, there's another enzyme comes back and starts to put this back together. Well, these enzymes are made of proteins. Where did these things come from? How did they, were they just there? No, they were created off of this. So, do you understand the catch-22 here? To have the first cell that had to form, that had, that ever formed had to have a complete set of DNA, not just have the language. It also had to have things called ribosomes and stuff and all these enzymes to be able to read it and make it and put it all together. Everything had to be there. If you're like back with a watch, if one piece is missing, this doesn't work. Or if you get the wrong base pair, if it's replicating or copying itself, the wrong base pair gets put in here. Wow, the designer put an enzyme thing in here called a proofreader. It runs through this thing looking for those. Hey, you're not supposed to be here. Pulls it out and puts another one in. This is remarkable. A molecular biologist by the name of Dr. Dean Kenyon used to be a Darwinian evolutionist, and he actually wrote a book called Biochemical Predestination. I don't know if any of the adults ever went through classes where that was a required reading in molecular biology, but the guy talked about how the first cell was forming and stuff. Finally, a student said, well, even if you got DNA in the first cell, what was there to read it? And Dr. Kenyon didn't have an answer, because you have to have this to make the thing that's going to read it. But to make the first one, you had to have the thing being read to make it. So Dean Kenyon, sitting right there in the classroom, realized, I'm totally wrong. And he switched over and he says, no, this is showing the existence of God. Another person come along not too long ago, Dr. Francis Collins. He was not a believer either. And he was assigned by the United States government to do the study of this, to map the genes on the human genome, the human DNA. After he did this, he said, he wrote a book about it called The Language of God. You can buy it today. And in this, he is describing, this is done by God. This is the language of God on how life was formed. This is an amazing thing. DNA. It's a remarkable thing. Oh, and I got to show you one of my favorites. I need a couple people to come up and help. Don't everybody run up here too quick. Boy, I tell you, I feel like giving some of you people like something to give you diarrhea to get you going. Yeah, be careful it doesn't rip. Hold that carefully. Grab the things. Hold it up. Becca, you might remember this. This used to hang in my classroom. It's the metabolic pathway chart. At the end of this lesson, I asked Charlotte to find me a small one to put in your handout there. And if you go to the end of this lesson, you'll see there's a page of this. What this is, metabolic pathway chart. It's a nightmare to many teachers. I used to love this thing because this shows the chemical reactions taking place inside of a cell. Only some of them that have been mapped. It's a flow chart. And we had tacos here tonight. There was beef. We had ice cream. We had sugar. Well, sugar is over in this area here. The type of sugar that was there is called sucrase, like table sugar, which is a disaccharide, two sugars. It's on here, sucrase, you can find it. And what enzyme breaks that down from two into one sugars? And then how it goes into a thing called the, the first thing of it. I want to get pyruvate. Oh, anyway. No, but there's a process it's called. Tim, do you remember? I can't remember. Or Seth, I mean. Well, the first stage of cellular respiration. I can't believe it's glycolysis. Thank you. Whoever had that. That's stickers. Glycolysis goes across here till you finally get pyruvate. Pyruvate then, from one sugar molecule, you get two pyruvates that go through the citric acid cycle here. And then it goes to the electron transport chain. And the whole thing is it's making a little bit of carbon dioxide, but it's also making ATP energy, which runs the cell. You can have all the amino acids that you're going to be breaking down from the beef you had tonight. The lipids that were in there also are being broke down. This is a chart that has a lot of this on here. And I know you can't see it very well because it's dark, but there's hundreds of little, actually about 1,000, little tiny names in blue. These are enzymes. Where did all these enzymes, where all these chemicals come from? It's all stored on the DNA. This is what it takes for a cell to form. This is a flow chart. Let me show you something else you're going to be working with this week. Keep holding that. I'm going to show you another flow chart. You're going to be doing algae identifications. These are flow charts. When I taught microbiology, I had my students make flow charts so that they could identify bacteria. The unknown lab. Everybody does those. Oh, my gosh, it's so much fun. And the thing is, you make a flow chart. I always had my students like Becca here to make a flow chart on how you're going to identify these things. But you know something? All of this requires intelligence. This is not random chance mutations. This is an intelligent designer. Thank you. I'll let somebody fold that up. It's like an old-fashioned roadmap. They're really hard. So all these enzymes and stuff have to be there. If one of these is missing, it could be fatal to that cell. You got to have everything there. It's like setting up thousands of dominoes. If you remove one of the dominoes, it could shut down the whole thing. This takes intelligence. To set up dominoes takes intelligence. That's what it all takes. Yeah. Thank you. Let her just... afterwards. Let's just wrap this up really quick by giving you, because people say, well, no scientist, nobody of really high intelligence, Richard Dawkins, very famous evolutionist, atheist, he says, there are no scientists that really believe in God, particularly the Christian God. So I've given you a few quotes here just to play with to end this off at. These are some of those brilliant scientists who've ever lived. My favorite scientist of all time, Louis Pasteur. If you don't know, Louis Pasteur believed in the Bible. He believed in God. He wrote, "Science brings men nearer to God." He said, "The more I study science, the more close I feel to God, because it draws me, God draws me to him through science." Wernher von Braun, he's the guy who designed the rockets that took the Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo astronauts to Saturn. He designed all that. And Wernher von Braun, when you ever hear an expression, it's an older expression, you don't hear too much today, but when they would say, you'd have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out, this is who they're talking about. This guy was brilliant. He said, quote, "My experiences with science led me to God," unquote. Or we'll take Anthony Flew, very famous atheist, until about 8 years ago, because he says, quote, "I now believe there is a God. I now think it is evident. I think it. The evidence does point to a creative intelligence almost entirely because of DNA investigations. What I think the DNA, the material, has done is that it is shown by almost unbelievable complexity of the arrangements which are needed to produce life, that intelligence must have been involved in getting these extraordinary diverse elements to work together." He's no longer an atheist. Salvador Dali, if you want to get into artwork, he actually wrote, "And now the announcement of Watson and Crick about DNA, this is for me, the DNA molecule, the real proof of the existence of God." Isaac Newton, famous scientist. Actually, did you know that Isaac Newton wrote more on the Bible? He was a theologian. He wrote commentaries and everything. He wrote more works on the Bible than he did on science. He wrote this, "What we know is a drop. What we do not know is a vast ocean. The admirable arrangement and the harmony of the universe could only have come from the plan of an omnipotent being." He's talking about God. He believed in God. Carl Ludwig Schleiden. He says, "I became a believer in my own way through the microscope and observation of nature. I want to contribute insofar as I can to the full harmony between science and religion." Our last session will do that more. Erwin Schrödinger, another very famous scientist, wrote, "The finest masterpiece is the one made by God according to the principles of quantum mechanics." This guy believes in God. Michael Faraday wrote, "The book of nature, which we have to read, is written by the finger of God." Talking like nature, DNA, stuff like this. It's the fingerprint of God. Galileo, the famous astronomer, wrote, "The laws of nature are written by the hand of God in the language of mathematics." Lord Kelvin has a whole temperature scale named after him. He wrote, quote, "If you think strongly enough, you will be forced by science to believe in God," unquote. One of the most brilliant scientists who ever lived. I mean, it is remarkable what's out there. I thank God that God gave me the eyes of a biologist to look at this stuff, and I see the handiwork of God. People often ask me, what's the strongest piece of evidence in nature I can show to the existence of God? There it is. A language. A language is only made by intelligence. This is proof. There is an intelligent designer out there.
We would like to thank the following gold and silver sponsors of the 2024 Marine Biology Trip who made this ministry possible. Marvin Joyce Husson, the Bojar family, Michael and Denise Lane, Jonah and Naomi Van Peterson, the Han family, Stitch It Custom Embroidery and so much more, Corey and Coco, Wildlake Real Estate, and Arizona Tea. You can learn more about sponsorships at evidenceforfaith.org/marinebiology or use the links in the description. This break is brought to you by the Marine Biology Trip, an Evidence for Faith adventure in science and the Bible in the Florida Keys for ages 14 and up. Here's what a past student had to say.
Throughout the day, we'd snorkel, we'd search different spots for different creatures, and then we would classify, and then we do lectures by Mike Lane. He goes into deep detail about stuff that you probably didn't know about the Bible, and I feel like I have learned a lot more about like the crucifixion, even about like science with the Bible. So like that science helps prove the Bible, not the other way around like people at school try to teach us.
Find out more about this adventure by clicking the link in the description or go to evidenceforfaith.org/marinebiology. That's evidence4faith.org/marinebiology.